wants to start off with the Iraq? What's the issue? Yes.
They use tactics to keep him there against his will, and pressure him to trying to buy a car. He sustained mental damage from it.
Tensional, friction, emotional distress. Did what the car dealership do with its high pressure sales rise to the level of intentional infliction of emotional distress? Well, let us see. Is it intentional infliction of ED? What are the elements? What do you got?
To prove the, intent and recklessness.
So there has to be intent, but there could be recklessness. What's the difference?
I feel like intent is actually like really meaning to do something, and recklessness is just like kind of being stupid and then something happens.
Could it just be kind of sort of stupid? Yeah, I think it has to be like really stupid.
Yeah,
really stupid. Yeah, okay, good. Just ask for a friend. Alright, two. What did you say?
Conduct must be extreme and outrageous.
Extreme and outrageous. What does that mean? What does that mean? Conduct, extreme and outrageous.
Would it cause harm to a regular person?
Remember, reasonable person standard. If what was done to plaintiff was done to somebody else, would a reasonable minded person observing that sit back and be like, whoa, God damn it, that's bad? I believe the court quoted the phrase from when this tort was first designed as being, it shocks the conscience. No normal, decent person would think that this is okay in any way, shape, or form. Alright, what also must there be?
Defendant's action is the cause of emotional distress.
Proximate cause. So, whatever they did is the causation of the what?
Emotional distress.
ED. And the fourth element?
Severity of distress.
Must be severe. What does that mean?
How affected was he in his day-to-day life?
Well, if he was just sad, good, he got his feelings hurt. Is that enough?
No, I think in his case was like, anxiety.
No. We're not going to get ahead. Oh. It's just having hurt feelings. Being offended. Oh, I'm offended.
No.
Is that enough?
No.
So the court's not just going to say, here's a tissue?
No.
Not enough. In order to get damages, there has to be severe harm. Okay, good. Any questions on the issue of the rule? Well, now let's take a quick look at the facts, and then we'll put the facts up to the roll and see if we can figure this out. What happened?
Mitchell LBN was a deaf man shopping
what?
In the car.
Huh?
He was a deaf man shopping for a car.
What?
Oh,
okay. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Shopping for a car at Grubb's Nissan.
Wait, hold on. Can a deaf person drive?
Yes.
How?
I didn't know that.
Why would they not?
They can still see.
They can see.
Thank you. That's all. Just making sure. Because I actually had one student ask me that once. How can a deaf person drive? You drive with these, not with these. If you're driving with these, that's all.
You can't hear
them.
The siren.
Yeah. Oh, what if someone honks
Oh, I know. They probably have to drive extra cautious. But being deaf is not a disability that will deny you your right to get a driver's license.
Having no arms and legs isn't a disability or something.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Look at that, what just happened. The dude that killed the guy for me.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily, just if you are legally deaf, that doesn't mean you can't necessarily hear all sounds. You could just be sufficiently totally deaf. Okay, good. Just make sure we understand. Okay, so he goes in to the car. Now, is that the reason why he got a sad? Because he was deaf?
No.
No, okay, so.
The salesman.
Was he actually looking to buy a car that day?
No.
No.
No, what's he doing?
He's kind of like looking.
Yeah, you know what that's called?
Window shopping.
Yeah, kicking the tires. He's kind of just seeing what's out there. All right, so did he disclose that? Did he disclose that I'm not looking to buy, I'm just here looking?
I'm not sure.
Yes.
Okay. So the salesman knew that he wasn't necessarily there to buy on that day. Did he disclose his disabilities?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So the salesman had knowledge of his intent, Bien's intent, and the fact that he had this disability. Okay, what else do you got?
They communicated through notes because he was deaf. The salesman pressured him to buy a car for hours and got him to write a $4,000.
What, when you say pressure, what do you mean by pressure?
Like, just kind of kept, like, swaying his decision, I guess.
Like, using psychological tactics.
Why didn't he just leave?
He took and withheld his truck keys, preventing him from leaving.
Why did the salesman take his truck keys?
So he had to buy the car.
So they could freeze the car.
Yeah.
That's what's involved. All right, so we just got to see if there's criminal activity going on here. Because that is potentially a larceny if he deprived the property of another with his intent to deny. So it wasn't like he stole the truck. It was just getting a break.
Yeah.
Can you leave if you no longer have your vehicle?
No.
Well, most people would not just walk off without their vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
He ignored repeated requests. The salesman reported his repeated requests to leave, mocked him, and continued pressuring him. He was pretty much trapped for several hours, so afterwards he suffered from...
We got false imprisonment too, by the way. Yeah, but he suffered.
Yeah.
So he was mocked, he was tormented, he was locked in an office for four or five hours? Huh. And then what happened to him?
He suffered from anxiety, depression, nightmares, lack of confidence and trust, and diagnosed by multiple doctors with psychological disorders.
Whoa! Just because he couldn't get a good deal on a new car?
He was trapped there.
All right. Any questions on the facts from anybody?
So, I have a question.
Sure.
Would this fowler fall under, like some of the stuff that was done, would it fall under ADA compliance?
I don't think so because of when this case happened.
That's what I was trying to, in my head, I'm like trying to think of when everything ADA, was it 90?
This case, I
this was 87.
Think so, yeah, 90. Yeah, it's all before that. All right, so we have this situation here. Where we have a car dealership potentially exploiting the customer. Question! Do you think the salesman would have done that and did what he did to the extent that he did if Bien had said, I'm here to buy a car and I want to get a car today? Do you think he would have ended up with the same type of experience?
No.
Do you think he would have ended up with the same type of experience if he did not have deafness?
I don't know. because there are things in there that they said. There's a statement in there about, because it's all written communication, because they knew we couldn't hear, there was something that was said about, oh, well, you can call your insurance company, because he wanted to go and call the insurance company at home. And they're like, no, you can call him from here. But they did it because they knew he couldn't use one of the phones there because they didn't have the right equipment to be able to.
But I just meant the way, the length of time, the method of pressure, the mocking. You think that would have happened if he had perfect hearing? So we have the potential exploitation of a disability, and we have this tactic that was used to basically pump up sales. Any of you ever get a job where you have to make certain quotas? You know, sales, high-pressure sales tactics? Yeah, I never did that either, but I know, I can't imagine it's that fun. But ultimately, the salesmen don't get paid if they don't make sales. So on one hand, you can kind of understand, but was this just a random sales technique? No, this just wasn't a random salesman acting like an ass. This was company policy. They were trained to do this. Which makes it even more egregious when they didn't seek accommodations based upon yeah. Did they do this to him intentionally?
Yes.
Or at the very least, recklessly considering his disabilities?
Yeah.
Okay. You, as the reasonable person, would you determine that locking somebody who has hearing disabilities in an office, taking their car, mocking them, leaving them there unattended for hours, could that be perceived as shocking the conscience of a reasonable-minded person? Is this what happened to him, the cause of his injury? All right. Now, here is the last nearly impossible threshold. It's really hard to win a case for intentional infliction of emotional distress. I do have fun with it when I laugh, oh, what you said. But really, that's the way the court looks at it. The court doesn't give a shit about your feelings. The court is not in the, we're going to give you hug business. The court is about maintaining levels of justice. And there is nothing in our Constitution, nor in our law, that says life is fair. There is no expectation that people are going to do things for you. In fact, the presumption is you're probably going to fail if you are too lazy or unmotivated to do things for yourself. So it's up to you to act. And sometimes you're going to lose. But does someone have the right to prey upon you? That's the distinction. That's the distinction. Would a reasonable person think that this plaintiff, in this circumstance, based on his disabilities and what they did to him, is the type of harm he alleged reasonable? What were the damages he claimed?
Depression.
Anxiety. Hold on, let's start off with depression. What's depression? What is depression?
Sadness.
Okay, sadness. Okay. Was he depressed before he went in there? Why would, after this experience, he be depressed? Felt like he was exploited because of things that he could control? Not at all. What also did he suffer?
Anxiety.
Anxiety. What's anxiety?
Panic, overthinking.
Fear, right? Basic fear that something bad is going to happen to you again. What also did he suffer?
Lack of confidence and trust.
What can he not do? He cannot effectively communicate with the world. How many people, just when you come across somebody that is a little different than you, have deep down inside laughed at them or mocked them? Don't give me the high and mighty stuff. We're all human. We all do. We all make judgments. But this individual could not adequately fit in because he lacked the one of the basic senses that we need to be active in our communities. We need to be able to see, we need to be able to communicate, we need to be able to hear, to respond. He's lacking one of those. Plus, I'm sure, if you've ever met anyone who is deaf, sometimes they've learned how to speak.
But they only talk because they can't enunciate the tones.
It's like those skull vibration headphones. You know, they make sounds based on what they can feel rather than the tone. So I'm sure he has been laughed at because of that. And now he's in a situation where he's trying to be an adult. And he has this happen to him. What also happened to this poor guy? PTSD, right? We would generally call that PTSD. Could he function?
No.
Do you think he's going to be able to get a job? Go to work? Why? What happens if a customer does this to me? What happens if my boss does this to me? What if one of my coworkers does this to me? Do I even want to leave the house? Because in order for me to leave the house, I'm going to have to go get another vehicle. I'm going to have to go deal with another salesman. Didn't he have a girlfriend too? I thought there was a reference in there. He had a girlfriend as well. How do you think, how do you think that relationship ended? Poorly. This was not good. So, would a reasonable jury find that there is in fact sufficient evidence to justify the claim of an intentional infliction of emotional distress? So, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? I don't think I have that in there. Do I have the damages that were awarded? All right, do you want to know what the original jury found and the appeals court sustained? He was entitled to general damages, medical and rehabilitation, $70 for past medical, $6,000 for future medical, $3,205 for past rehabilitation. He also received loss of earning capacity. Because this kid is not getting a job for a real, real, real long time. Court granted him $112,910. Because that's how much money he lost up to the point when it got to court. It's probably about 3 years' wages, if I had to guess. And then they gave him a fourth year, future, $34,650. He also received damages for the physical symptoms that he was suffering from. $50,000 for past symptoms and discomfort. $50,000 more for future physical signs of symptoms and discomfort. Then they imposed punitive damages. Why are we going to give punitive damages? What's the purpose of punitive damages? We know what general damages are for, but what are punitive damages for? To punish. Just to punish the individual defendant?
No, the whole enterprise.
To send a message across an entire industry. You do not do this to people who have physical disabilities. You do not do this. Past emotional injury and mental anguish, $101,980. And then future emotional injury and mental anguish of $200,000. Then he also received special damages.
past loss of society, and reduced ability to socially interact with family, former fiancé, and friends, and hearing people in general. He got $10,000 for past, and then he got $5,000 for future. When it was all said and done, that's going to put us, ballpark figure, at about $500,000, give or take, in the late 1980s. That was a lot of money. Yes?
I know you said that, like, people go to a civil court to, like, not get rich, but, like, adjust it to that.
There's a, just one minor correction. There's no such thing as a civil court. You just go to court.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. For civil cases, sorry.
Yeah, civil cases.
That people don't go to be rich, but, like, adjust it to that. It's, like, probably, like, a couple million at least.
Well, think about it. This kid, the biggest chunk of money that he got was it took him 3 years to get to court. Because having a court case is not easy. So he couldn't work for those 3 years, so they gave him a fourth. And then they wanted to punish. So did this make this kid rich? Well, you got to figure he's got to lose at least a third to his attorneys. And if he's going to be suffering for a lifetime of pain and suffering, is the amount of money he had left. So figure $300,000, give or take, is that going to be enough to take care of him for the rest of his life?
No. Could be. I mean, the average person only makes, like, I think a million in their lifetime. So adjusted to that, it's a couple mil.
Right, but he got his money in, like, 1989. Do you think he has any of that money left?
He was smart with it, yeah.
He was smart with it. But at the end of the day, it's not about him getting rich. It's about, with the punitive damages, sending a message. Society will not tolerate this type of behavior. Now, if the court didn't award punitive damages, then that would be roughly in proportion to the compensation that he was entitled to. The only thing extra was the punitive damages. Yep?
When you win a case kind of going on the lines of thinking you're getting rich type of thing, you still have to pay taxes on it.
Oh, yeah. You get taxes on that as well because that's considered income.
Yeah.
So lop off at least another third. That doesn't leave you with much money.
Like if you win $1 million scratch ticket, you're not.
No. Actually, I had a buddy that won $1 million on a scratch ticket. You know how much he ended up taking home? After he had to pay an attorney, he had to pay taxes all up front. He also had to pay a finance guy. He got about $370,000. It was enough for him to pay off his house, so he was happy, but still. All right, any other questions on this case? All right, of course, I will collect those, pass those up for those of you who do it. Now, by the way, I have been trying to figure out gradebook. I'm trying to get it so I can give you your quiz average and your homework average. I did post the exam grades. I did that. I don't remember when I did it. So if you didn't notice that, you can at least see what you got on the exam. But remember, the exams themselves are worth less proportionally than the weight of all of the quizzes and the homeworks. So if you are one of the people that have not been doing homework regularly, about 17% of your grade is going to be a zero. And if you've missed more quizzes than you've taken, again, you got another 15, 17% of your grade that's going to be in the F range. So it's not, as I said on day one, it's not about just taking the test. It's about doing all this stuff because this is the only way you can figure it all out. So just be mindful of that. Just be mindful of that. And as soon as I figured, I've been trying. I caused the grade book on Blackboard to crash 5 times trying to figure this out. I keep doing what they say to do, but apparently I'm just inept. Or Blackboard sucks, one or the other. All right, so 15 minutes left. Let's gain some knowledge. What do I want to do? Well, let's do negligence. We got 2 things left for our next exam. We got to do negligence and we got to do agency. Agency. But we'll do negligence first. Why? Why not? Because negligence essentially is an unintentional catch-all for torts. In order to be liable for a tort, there must be intent. But when you do something that involves dumbassery, and you didn't mean to do what you did, there's where negligence comes in. negligence. Negligence is a legal standard imposed when an individual in society fails to fulfill their basic duty that they owe to their fellow man. And what is that duty? Just act reasonably. Again, you don't have to be a saint. You don't have to be a good Samaritan. If you don't want to, you don't have to stop your car, jump out, and go grab the nice little old lady and help her across the crosswalk. You don't have to do that. You don't have to give money to all the bums that are sitting on the side of the corners trying to scam people out of money so they can go buy drugs. You don't have to do that. You don't have to wave, you don't have to smile. But you know what you cannot do? You cannot act in a way that is irresponsible that could result in harming someone else. The key, most important thing is that negligence involves doing something without there being intent. Meaning, you're going to do something, and by the way, it has nothing to do with morality. Negligence is not morals, not ethics. Negligence is you just did something that's unreasonable and you're risking harm to others. And that risk is in what they refer to as a foreseeable zone of danger. In other words, if I do something dumb here, is it going to impact the people in the first row? Well, it depends on what it is. Everyone does stupid things all the time. But sometimes when you do stupid things, that does not result in potential liability. But liability could ensue if you engage in this unreasonable behavior in a way that could present harm. But here's the biggest challenge. A tort, intentional infliction of emotional distress. The courts have codified it. It's easy to put the facts up to the rule. Was there an intentional act or a reckless act? Was the act extreme and outrageous? Was that behavior the proximate cause of the harm? And was the harm actually severe? You can put facts up to that rule and you can say yes or no. Relatively easy. But with negligence, not so much. Not so much. It's not quite a subjective standard. There's still a degree of objectivity, but it's very vague because what you think is unreasonable, somebody else might think is fine. So it's a very vague standard of conduct. But ultimately, the law does the best that it can do. So how do you determine it? Well, it depends. What was involved? What did it entail? And who is involved? So what are we talking about? Well, for instance, let's say I walk up this row, and as I walk up this row, I start swinging my arms real hard. Would that be deemed as unreasonable conduct? Well, let's think. Are we in a mosh pit right now? Where are we? We're in a classroom. Would any reasonable person think that it would be perfectly okay for some guy to walk up an aisle with two people on both sides and everyone in the row gets their heads bashed? Would that be negligence? Yeah.
Yeah, it would.
I could be deemed to have acted irresponsibly.
But
I have always been, ever since the genre began, a big fan of heavy metal music. I have gone to many concerts in my day, and I engaged in much legalized violence in mosh pits as I could get away with. I got the crap beat out of me, and I beat the crap out of other dudes. Why? Because it was fun. But is that level of violence unreasonable? No, because the vast majority of people know that if you go to a concert and a mosh pit breaks out, guys, particularly, you know, bigger, muscular guys, are going to get in there and they're going to throw down just because guys do stupid shit. Would that be negligence? No. More likely than not, no. Could be. Could be. Because let's say if the mosh pit, all the people moshing, were a bunch of 5-year-olds, and then I jumped in. That might be negligent. Again, who's involved? What are the circumstances?
It depends. It depends. What could be negligence in one instance might not be in another. So what are we looking at? Again, physical attributes. We're looking at mental capacity. You know, would a person of that particular age know better? What did they know? Did they actually owe a duty to whoever was involved? When did it happen? There's different metrics. And as we look at some of the negligence cases, you'll see the courts engage in that type of analysis. But ultimately, at the end of the day, negligence is, to quote, an act which a reasonable man would recognize as involving a risk of harm to another. The risk is unreasonable, and the act is negligent if the risk of such magnitude as to outweigh what the law regards as the utility of the act or of the particular manner in which it's done. In other words, when did it happen? Where did it happen? How did it happen? Who's involved? All right, how does one establish a successful claim against negligence? Well, there must be either a common law duty or some type of standard that was codified in a statute. Common law duty, you don't have the right to harm another human being. Statutory duty, selling cigarettes to a minor. Law says in Massachusetts, no one under the age of 21 can buy a pack of cigarettes. If you are a clerk at a convenience store and you sold a pack of cigarettes to a minor, you breached your duty. Statutory duty. Well, you have to not do what you're supposed to do, or you're basically not supposed to follow the law. Breach. There has to be a duty, there has to be a breach. You can't be sued for negligence if you were doing what you were supposed to do. That makes no sense. So that's an easy element. Ah! Proximate cause. Proximate cause. Is not doing what you're supposed to do the cause of the harm? I'm not going to use cigarettes, I'm going to swap that with alcohol. If you are a minor and you come into my package store and I don't check your ID and I sell you alcohol, you consume alcohol, then you get in a car and you kill yourself. Is my failure to follow my statutory duty the proximate cause of your death? Would you have died but for my not checking your ID?
Probably not. It's really hard to die from operating under the influence if you have no alcohol to begin with, right?
Okay. Remember, it's all about the incident. What are the other possibilities? That's not relevant. Oh!
Is the harm that plaintiff suffered, is that foreseeable? Foreseeability, a likely outcome of the breach. So, if you are a minor, you come into my package store, I don't check your ID, you buy alcohol, you get in your car, you drive out of the parking lot, you get T-boned by a dump truck and you die. Is my selling you alcohol in any way, shape, or form related to the harm that you suffered? No, you didn't even open the bottle. You just drove out of the parking lot. What's the foreseeable harm for selling alcohol to a minor? Well, an alcohol-related injury. Is just getting an fender bender, is that foreseeable? No. Last but not least, plaintiff has to suffer some level of actual harm. If I mislabeled a bottle of salad dressing, and what in fact was the creamy contents of the bottle, arsenic. Did I fulfill my duty? Probably not. If you got a bottle that came out of my factory that was mislabeled as such, there's probably a breach of the duty. And obviously, if you consume a bottle of arsenic labeled as creamy Italian dressing, it's foreseeable that you would die. But when you opened the bottle, you smelt it. It smelled like shit, so you dumped it down the drain. Did you suffer any harm? Would you have a claim for negligence, even though I did fail to live to the standards that society expects of me? No, you would have no claim. You would have no claim.
Duty, breach, proximate cause, harm, well, foreseeability, and actual harm. Questions?
Negligence cases. Take a look at them. Have them ready for next class. Enjoy the day. It's going to get cold tomorrow.